Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Thanks to everyone who supports Independent Tech News directly. If you're not already, become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, November 26, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I forgot the day. Producer Roger Chang having a lovely day.
Welcome back, us, because you were here, but we were gone on Thursday and Friday.
So much pie, so much turkey. We're getting back together.
anyone in the U.S. who celebrated, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. The rest of you, I hope you had a lovely end of your regular week and enjoyed the new weekend preview of Daily Tech Headlines. Weekend review that Rich Straffolino put in the Daily Tech Headlines feed on Saturday. That's going to be a regular feature. But we're back, so let's start with a few tech things you should know.
It's a tale as old as VHS, perhaps. Microsoft and Apple duking it out for something. And these days, it's for the title of the world's most valuable company by market capitalization. So Microsoft passed Apple Monday, being worth $812.93 billion as Apple dipped below it to $812.6 billion. The two companies' stocks prices fluctuated the rest of the day with the two companies trading places a few times. If you care about these things.
Who's number one? You care if you own their stock, I guess. Mm. Businesses in Ohio might care about this. You can now pay your taxes in Ohio in Bitcoin. The first U.S. state to allow that. These are business taxes, not personal taxes. Companies must register at ohiocrypto.com, although you might want to pay soon as Bitcoin prices continue to fall Monday trading below $3,900. Let's talk a little more about whether you should use your mobile connection or your Wi-Fi connection.
Let's do it, Tom. OpenSignal's speed test in 80 countries showed that Wi-Fi was slower than mobile networks in 33 countries. Wi-Fi suffered from congestion of the airwaves in some locations. Australians had the biggest advantage with mobile networks 13 megabits per second faster than Wi-Fi on average. Qatar, France, Mexico, Turkey, and South Africa were among the other countries where mobile was faster than Wi-Fi. However, Wi-Fi was more than twice as fast on average than mobile in Hong Kong, the U.S., Thailand, Israel, and Russia.
You know that some of you just got caught going, Wi-Fi is way faster than mobile where I live. And then realized, oh, wait, I live in Hong Kong, the U.S., Thailand, Russia, or Israel.
Or Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has to do with whether you have congestion of Wi-Fi, as Sarah said, and really fast internet. If you have really fast internet on wired combined with high rollouts of modern protocol Wi-Fi routers, and maybe your 4G service isn't that great, then you're going to have faster Wi-Fi. But if you've got fast LTE service and maybe the landlines aren't so great around you, then you might have faster mobile. I found this fascinating.
You know, it's funny. I've got a little sort of lake, pond, whatever, near me, and they have one of these like Toyota-sponsored, you know, free Wi-Fi. And it's funny because I sort of look at that and I'm like, I mean, I don't need your like free Wi-Fi because you're Toyota kind of thing, because my service is quite fast using my cell service in my particular neighborhood. But I don't know. I mean, how much is that sort of thing still, a drive where a company can, you know, can do sort of a goodwill measure by giving free Wi-Fi in an area where they know a lot of people are going to be hanging out?
Yeah, it depends on the country. Certainly in India, it's huge. That kind of thing, and other countries as well. I think in touristy areas, it's often appreciated by people, especially as roaming is still a little complicated. You still can't always get the best roaming. I think that's something that we'll probably see go away as mobile service gets better and better, and as we seem to be slowly moving towards universal roaming, you know, waiving of roaming fees. I mean, we're not there by any stretch, but we're making slow moves toward that. I was just doing a speed test right now. My LTE service right here is 14.9 megabits per second right now. Now I'm going to turn on my Wi-Fi, and I'm right next to the Wi-Fi router, so it ought to be pretty good. But I'm actually curious.
And you're hardwired?
No, I'm doing it on my phone.
Okay, all right.
So I'm not hardwired. I'm, but my Wi-Fi is hardwired.
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm already seeing like 300 megabits per second on the Wi-Fi, so not even close.
Dang. Well,
yeah. So you're I'm in the U.S. That's what I should have, according to this Open Signal study. Speaking of the U.S., the United States Supreme Court heard arguments in Apple's appeal of a decision to allow a class action lawsuit accusing Apple of violating antitrust law by restricting apps to only those sold in the App Store, which the class action says inflates prices. Now, the reason it's going to the Supreme Court is the lower court said, yes, you can bring the suit. They didn't rule in favor of Apple or the class. They just said, you can bring the suit. Apple is saying that the plaintiffs lack legal standing to bring this lawsuit because a 1977 decision, which is considered a precedent in such cases, limits damages to those directly overcharged rather than the indirect victims of overcharging. And Apple's like, the developers set the price. If anybody's overcharging them, it's them, not us. We don't set the price, but Apple does take 30%. So that's what the class says. Yeah, maybe you don't set the price, but you're the one charging us. We buy it through you. Now, here's how the justices broke down their reactions. It seems like they're leaning against letting the case be brought. Justice Kagan said, from my perspective, I've just engaged in a one-step transaction with Apple. She said, talking about the App Store. She's like, I go into Apple, I pay Apple with my Apple Pay, and I get the app. Justice Gorsuch wondered whether the 1977 ruling even should apply in modern marketplaces like the App Store. He thinks maybe we just need a new ruling altogether. Justice Kavanaugh said plaintiffs would have more of a right to sue Apple if they bought the apps from the developers, and if Apple bought the apps from the developers and then added its 30%. But the fact that Apple just let somebody set the prices seemed to be kind of persuasive to him. And Chief Justice Roberts expressed concern that Apple could be held liable on price, both by the app developers and consumers, if the suit was allowed. So it wasn't 100%. And we don't know the decision yet, but it does. It's always hard to read the tea leaves on these. Sometimes the justices will lean one way in their questioning in order to force responses that they'll then use to rule in a different way than it looked.
All right. So the question here is, should Apple be able to set prices?
Yes. Justice Lane, not should Apple be able to set prices, but is Apple liable for inflated prices since they take 30% and they don't let developers sell their apps any other way except through the App Store?
One would think yes.
So you'd say, no, you should be able to sue them for that.
That would be my first response. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you think that Apple should lose the lawsuit, which is a separate question, right?
It's right. One
thing to say, yeah, you should be allowed to sue. That doesn't mean you'll win, though. That's a harder question, right?
It's like,
is Apple guilty of antitrust by not allowing third-party apps in their App Store? Because they don't set prices. They just charge to get in the App Store, but they charge to get in the App Store and there's no competition. You can't drive down Apple's percentage cut because without jailbreaking, going around breaking terms of service, there's no other way to get apps on the app on the phone.
I would welcome the community's responses. Please feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. For now, we'll move on to the next story. VentureBeat published a video of a restaurant receiving a call from Google Duplex requesting a reservation. Back in June, Google said it would disclose all Duplex AI calls by saying something like, "Hi, I'm the Google Assistant calling to make a reservation for a client. This automated call will be recorded. Let everybody know." But in the VentureBeat video, you hear, "Hi, I'm calling to make a reservation for a client. I'm calling from Google, so the call may be recorded." There's a difference here. The Verge has sources who say the reason is because the call in the VentureBeat video was made by a human at Google, not an AI. Apparently, while Duplex is in testing, some calls are made by AI, while some are made by humans.
Yeah, so this is interesting. It's
weird.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
There was some comment about the VentureBeat video saying, "Hey, they didn't say they were an AI. Has Google changed their policy?" The Verge found out, no, that was just a human. And so when you're a human, they don't say they're an AI. But the Verge is asking, should you say you're a human? If the expectation might be that this is an automated call, should you be forced to say, "Hi, I'm a person from Google"? I think a more interesting question to me is, why are they still having humans place these calls? I know that Duplex has a failover. If Duplex gets confused, it can hand it over to a human. But why in the test are they having humans just do the call altogether? That implies there may be a capacity or performance issue on Duplex.
Well, or maybe Google is trying to collect information on whether having a human versus the AI version better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're maybe doing some A/B testing where they're like, let's have some humans do it and then we can compare results. I think you that's actually a really good reason why that would be. So all right.
But I mean, we've talked about this on the show in a lot of capacities. The idea of, do you have to tell somebody that you're a human versus a robot? And if you don't, what are the implications of that? Are you confusing the person on the other end of the call? And, why are these calls? When do calls like this actually make more sense? And, obviously, as we figured out, it's still a bit up in the air.
Yeah, and this is still in the testing phase. Not everybody has access to this. So it would make sense that they're just trying out some different things. I yield my objection. Scientists from MIT published a paper in Nature last week describing a 12-second, 60-meter test flight of a 2.45-kilogram plane, so pretty light, with no moving parts. That's the big part. Yeah, it didn't fly long or even that far, about the length of a high school gym. And it was pretty light, just a few pounds, but man, no moving parts, no quadcopter, no rotors, nothing. Such a plane would be quieter, easier to maintain, and have no emissions. The thruster uses high voltage to generate ions in the air around two electrodes. The ions get thrown between the electrodes, colliding with air, which creates ionic wind. So you have twin ion engines, even though it's not really an engine, or TIE. If you were to make these fighters, they would then be TIE fighters. Following me? Anyway, the technique has been known since the 1960s, but they could never make it create enough thrust until now. The current system may or may not scale to passenger planes. They're not sure. They're going to try, but they're not sure. It could, however, be used in combination with traditional passenger jet engines to reduce drag.
Well, I will tell you, as somebody who has a helicopter hovering over me very often, because the helicopter likes to see the freeway activity near me, I welcome this. My goodness. And I know, you know, planes and helicopters work a little bit differently, but the less noise, the better.
Yeah. I do like to know when the copters, sometimes they're not just traffic copters. Sometimes they're police copters. It's nice to know when they're there, if it's a police copter, that something's going on, but I don't want flying things to be loud just because of that. And this is crazy. Like, even if they're just the idea to reduce drag here is you could have the ion engines sort of act as boosters for the air that naturally flows around a plane. A lot of times, and I won't get into all of the physics of why, but a lot of times the air that's flowing around a plane builds up behind the plane and actually causes drag, and it slows the plane down. You could make jet engines more efficient by speeding up the air that's going past the plane so it doesn't drag the plane down. And you could use, even if these twin ion engines are not good enough to power the plane entirely, it could help make it a lot more fuel efficient. So it's a pretty cool story, and you should check it out. Technologyreview.com has a great write-up on it, or just go to Nature and read about it yourself.
Krebs on Security reports research from anti-phishing company PhishLab shows that 49% of all phishing sites in Q3 of this year used HTTPS. So showed up in browsers as secure sites. All right. That's up 25% a year ago. 80% of users surveyed by PhishLab believed a green lock icon in a browser meant that the site was legitimate. So remember, HTTPS and the green lock means the info you're sending to the site is encrypted and can't be read by others, at least in theory, right? Doesn't mean the site itself is where you should send the data in the first place.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So phishing sites, and I know some of you are imagining tuna right now. We're talking about phishing as in, like, you know, when you try to trick someone into giving you information. So phishing sites want to trick you. What's one of the great ways to trick you? Get a free security certificate. It's not actually fraud to start a website and get a security certificate from it. So even if you're a phishing site, you're not breaking the law by having a security certificate. You're just saying, yes, the connection between my server and your web browser is secure. Nobody but me, the fisher, can see what you give me. Now give me your personal data. It's all about what data you're giving and to whom, not just whether third parties can see it or not. That's just an example of phishing sites getting smarter and smarter. And so you have to continually, if you want to be secure, make sure that your shortcuts, if you're using shortcuts for security, are valid. And the green icon means, I can be on this connection in a coffee shop and it's unlikely someone will see my third-party traffic. It doesn't mean, the website I'm talking with has been proven to be a legitimate website.
Well, yeah. And then we get into a conversation of how do we make sure that the general populace understands the difference between those two? Because you a lot of people don't.
We start with Krebs posting about this. Yeah. We start with PhishLab doing the report. Then we start with Krebs posting it. Then we have DTNS pass it along to all of you who then need to spread the word to your friends and family. Hey, green icon just means nobody can see what you're browsing. Doesn't mean the site's secure. That's a tough one, though, because that's hard. People are like, yeah, but, oh, so wait a minute. So the green doesn't mean good? Like, people just want simple.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, it's complicated.
To get all the tech headlines each day in a simple manner, about 5 minutes or less, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. So, Sarah, Facebook's making news again today, aren't
they? Oh, man. I mean, of all the days that Tom and Roger and I say, let's just not make Facebook our main topic, today was a day that we were like, let's do it. Bloomberg's Sarah Friar has an article out today. You might have read it. If you haven't, please do. It's called Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg is Tainted by Crisis After Crisis. So the idea is Sheryl Sandberg is at the root of some of Facebook's PR nightmare problems. The buzz is around the fact that Facebook already disbanded the war room that it showed off for dealing with the U.S. in midterms, is relying on now something called Strategic Response Team, set up by Sheryl Sandberg. So again, it's sort of like when Uber had God mode. Doesn't sound that great. War room, okay. Well, they basically renamed something. Sheryl Sandberg famously wrote a book back in 2013 called Lean In, which advocated for women in the workplace. In most respects, she's very well respected. And one Facebook worker said, as far as this whole war room thing is concerned, she's always going to be tainted. The person asked not to be identified for fear of losing their job. So, okay, this is a anonymous source. Now, okay, Sandberg she's on top of quite a bit at Facebook. She leads legal and policy, makes her largely responsible for rising regulatory risks, government relationships, and would be remiss if we didn't mention that Facebook stock since this summer has slumped quite a bit, 39%. So I don't know, Tom, Roger, everybody, I'm asking you, does this seem like somebody who should be held responsible for a lot of Facebook's issues?
Yeah, the strategic response team that you mentioned is set up right outside Sheryl's office. She has a 10:30 a.m. meeting, according to this Bloomberg article, with them every day to help her understand what the threats to Facebook are. And that's an attempt to rid Facebook of the problem where someone says Russia meddled in the elections and you didn't do anything about it. And they say, did they though? Was it really a problem? And are perceived as responding slowly, if at all. This is to anticipate those sorts of things. So the whole war room thing does come off a little bit as a PR stunt. Like, we'll put together a war room for the election. But really the solution is this strategic response team. If the strategic response team is there to help Sheryl Sandberg understand the threats to Facebook, ipso facto, as you pointed out, that makes Sheryl Sandberg responsible for the things that are happening to Facebook. And she has gone in the media eye, the tech media eye, from being a darling to someone that needs to be blamed. I think there's a worry about criticizing her. This New York Times article from last week, we talked a lot about Zuckerberg in relation to that. Touched on it. The Bloomberg article takes it farther in saying, well, gosh, this is the woman who wrote Lean In. She's one of the few high-level female executives in Silicon Valley. Do we really want to drag down her reputation? On the other hand, it does seem like she is responsible for a lot of the things at Facebook that people have been criticizing. And granted, Zuckerberg's responsible for all of it, but he is a level up from even Sheryl Sandberg. And Sandberg, as you said, is in charge of marketing, sales, policy, and legal. So,
well, and I think this asks the question, okay, well, Mark Zuckerberg is the CEO, obviously, he's the face of Facebook, but Sheryl Sandberg obviously has a hand in much of the day-to-day operations of it. So how much of it should be, put on her rather than him? Is he a figurehead? Is this warranted? If things aren't going well at Facebook, to sort of dump on Sandberg?
Yeah, she I mean, she's responsible for the day to day in a sense. She's not the person who directs it. It does become a game of you know, point the arrow, right? They had a head of policy who was in charge of the policies related to their responses to things like the Cambridge Analytica scandal. That person is leaving. And Nick Clegg, the former deputy prime minister of the United Kingdom, is taking over at Facebook as head of policy. So the next policy problem, is it Sandberg's fault or is it Clegg's fault or is it both's fault? We start to play these games, and I think it's sometimes hard for me to figure out whether it's the media having diluted themselves into one narrative and trying to pull out another narrative versus what's actually happened. And yeah. My feeling on what's happened with Facebook is the same thing I said about Zuckerberg applies to Sheryl Sandberg. She believed that they had thought of everything, that they're really smart, which they are, and that if people were pointing out a problem, then the people were missing something, because Facebook obviously wasn't doing bad things. They wouldn't do things the way they are. And it took a long time for her to realize, wait a minute, a lot of people think this is a problem. Maybe it is.
I think part of it is that when you have an executive group that's had so much exposure and so much through so much, after a while, I mean, you really can't, whether it's right or wrong, you really can't separate that individual from the litany of issues, whether it's legal, political, whatever. And, you know, it's one of those company things where you just kind of got to cut people loose, because the people that you have aren't necessarily going to be the ones that are going to right the ship, right? I mean, you have this issue.
You think Sheryl Sandberg should go?
Yeah, I think she should go. I honestly do. And you know what? She might have not had any direct role in any of it, but she is connected, and ultimately she is the face and the at being a COO, she has a responsibility. Even if you weren't aware, it's your job to be aware and to kind of soak up the responsibility on that, because that's part of the gig. Now, Zuckerberg is a different issue, and I have thoughts on him too, but as it applies to Sheryl, she needs to go. I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, you know, maybe it's not her fault. I mean, I don't think this boat will ever right itself if you have the same group of people steering the ship.
As much as I don't like Facebook and I don't use them much, I also think the mistakes they have made are highly exaggerated and emotionally manipulated. I think if other companies made similar mistakes that weren't involved in the election or with the emotional attachment people have to social networks, that they wouldn't be considered to be fireable offenses.
That's exactly what Facebook is.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure what damage has been done. And if you have executives that are now doing the right thing because, hey, nobody ever did this before, and yeah, we handled admitting we were wrong really badly, but we've learned from that. Is it possible that it's better to keep those people who've learned the lesson in their position rather than bring in people who are more inexperienced in the brand new industry?
You know, that's always been kind of the reason for keeping the old guard. And there's a parallel industry to this, and that's, at least in the US, it's the car industry. You've literally for the longest time had the same group of people running things, and they might have swapped out CEOs, but it was the same group of people. You know, the argument eventually was like, listen, you're never going to right this boat. You know, we're losing sales, or our cars are coming out crappy. You know, the people who put you in this situation generally aren't the people that are going to be able to pull you out.
But there's a very demonstrable problem with the car industry. They were losing sales. Facebook isn't losing sales. The only thing they're losing is stock price, which largely is because of a negative perception of them, which may not be based on reality.
Well, you know, and that's why I said, whether rightly or wrongly, it is her direct responsibility. There needs to be something that improves that relationship, right? In a perfect world, yeah, everyone who's actually responsible for stuff falling off the wagon gets pinned for it. But we don't work in an ideal situation. And if you were talking from a business perspective, I mean, at some point, you know, someone, something needs to happen, and you cannot just have, you know, a press release after press release and hoping that you can paper over the cracks until something better down the road materializes and everyone forgives you.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's what's happening with Sandberg, though. And I'm not sure that you wouldn't be papering over the cracks by replacing her, because I don't know who you get to do that job better.
Exactly. Well, you know who doesn't do it better or can't be bested anyway? The people who participate in our subreddit, submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. If you like, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Join the conversation.
Yeah, the conversation continues right here from the mailbag, for instance.
Oh, it certainly does. So Tony wrote in about our conversation last week where Tom kind of took me to task saying, you're an American, you don't realize that the rest of the world is very, very cashless. What?
I took you and everybody else.
Sure, exactly. But, you know, it's a good thing to remember. Tony says, as you're aware, Australia has somewhat embraced the whole tap and go system. I've been somewhat concerned about a recent trip that my family had to your fair country, talking about the U.S. My main concern, apart from not tipping enough. I've been present twice when a waitress has stood up and argued over a tip. That's a little weird, but okay. Was having to carry larger amounts of cash around, not just because of the possibilities of robbery, but not bringing enough and running out before the end of the trip. As it turned out, I was pleasantly surprised. Although perhaps not always true tap and go, as PIN numbers were often required, all shops were happy to accept my card, even for relatively small transactions. The only place that didn't was a small lunch stop we encountered on a tour, which was well out of town. Admittedly, we stayed in a very touristy area of Hawaii, and perhaps other areas are not geared up for the same convenience. I was still very pleased, both not running out of cash or getting chased down on the street by an upset waitress.
Yeah, that waitress thing, that is a very unusual situation. I am glad that your experience was that there were more places you could pay with tap. For comparison, I was in a very small town way out in the outback. I don't know if it was in the outback. It was in rural Australia at a pie shop that took my Apple Pay. So I was impressed by that. I think that there are more places in the US that can handle it than there used to be, though. So that's good. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what's funny, depending on where you're from and where you're visiting, the idea of tipping can be a little, it's either normal or it's a little weird. And I definitely see where you were coming from, Tony. Not that a waitress should be being rude to you because you didn't tip enough, but there is an expectation and there is a sort of unspoken understanding of how it works. If you're used to it, well, weird as it may be, it's just the way that it works.
Yeah.
But it's somewhat odd, quite honestly, because it's a social thing rather than an agreed upon monetary thing.
Yeah. And it seems like hardware is usually the blocking. Silverblade points out a lot of places don't have tap because they don't want to get new hardware. They don't want to pay for it. And I've noticed that smaller shops often will have tap because they're brand new and they just got an iPad based, you know, cash register system or something like that. So it is interesting how it all rolls out. Hey folks, we need 12 of you to sign up for DTNS to hit our monthly goal of one more patron than last month. We've got 4 more days left in November. So everybody who's supporting us, please hold on if you can. And just 12, if you're one of the 12 out there that's not supporting us, then all you need to do is sign up. And we're even going to make it sweet for you. A special offer. If you become a patron, or if you stay a patron, between now and December 5th, you'll get a holiday postcard with a special message from the DTNS team. Remember, you do have to give us your mailing address to get a card, or we can't send you a card. You can add that in your settings. If you don't feel comfortable doing that, that's fine. We just can't send you a card if we don't know where to send it, obviously. So sign up at patreon.com/DTNS. And of course, we thank you for your support.
We also thank you for your feedback. Your feedback helps us make our show better. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Please keep giving us feedback. We're also live Monday through Friday. If you can join us live, we'd love to have you. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program. Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.